From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 190 with guest Ned Pyle, recorded Wednesday, December 1st, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by TWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell flying solo for Run As Radio. My guest today is Ned Pyle. Ned, I've been reading your stuff for years, but what team are you with?
I'm with the directory services team at Microsoft, what we call the third tier escalation team, and I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. So only when the problems get really grim do they get all the way to you?
Sometimes it's pretty grim. Sometimes it's the customer paid, you know, a tremendous amount of cash just to, you know, have a bunch of people sitting around at their beck and call.
Right.
And sometimes it's escalations and sometimes it's a combination.
So the particular tool that really fascinated me was the FRS to DFSR migration tool. And this only came out this year in 2010, right?
Right.
So, I mean, the issue here is 2008 R2 FRS is essentially obsolete.
Yeah, so it's been slowly being deprecated as time goes by. And you know how we never really get rid of anything in Windows, but this is one of those exceptions where we've tried to make it go away. And starting in 2008, it became something you didn't have to use anymore for sysvol. And starting in 2008 R2, it became something that you could only use for sysvol.
Right.
And, you know, conceivably in the next OS, it might be gone. I would really doubt it. But it's not going to get any more useful in the future. It really doesn't have any developers anymore. It doesn't have anybody maintaining it anymore. It's just sort of coasting along.
What, and why are we getting rid of FRS? What's its real problem?
There's no, as far as sysvol goes, the problems aren't too bad because of the behaviors people use with sysvol. They
right.
don't tend to put a lot of data in there, and they don't tend to modify it a whole lot unless they're kind of wacky. And it's not too bad. It was really in other types of data sets where it didn't scale, and it had some real bad reliability problems. And
yeah, and its reaction to having any kind of problem is just resync everything, which is tough
yeah.
when you're paying by the byte. Ouch.
Yeah, and that was pretty grim. So plus, there's really not a whole lot of things you can do to fix it other than to resync
yeah.
everything. That's really the kind of the worst part. We call the R2 the D2 burr flag here is gets used all the time by us. So if we're using it, that means that there's no better solution most of the time.
Right.
So that was the big push, was to get it replaced with something, learning from those experiences. That's what DFSR was. And at first it was just for custom, and now it became for sysvol. And so it doesn't really buy you tremendous advantages for sysvol, except, you know, it's got monitoring options and reliability is much better, and it could scale if you really did have a lot of stuff in sysvol or netlog on. And just generally speaking, it's got some support behind it. You know, people are working on it.
Well, you work on, I mean, I hate to see what your view of Active Directory is, because you tend to work on the big problem areas all the time. Like, you must have seen some scary sysvols.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we see scary sysvols every day. It's still a huge call generator from a per capita kind of standpoint. And you see people doing sometimes some fairly interesting stuff with sysvol, using it as a application install point for hundreds of gig of data.
Jeez.
It just kind of, yeah, it's out of control. So it mostly gets used correctly. Most
right.
people use it correctly. Most people don't even really know that it exists, because it's, you know, the interface to it is group policy for the most part, and group policy has already got some nice front ends that take care of everything. So a lot of folks we talk to don't even really recognize what it is or what it's about.
And as long as you're communicating through a group policy level, sysvol's not going to bite you.
For the most part.
Yeah.
For the most part. The big problems we see with sysvol, even when you're doing everything right with FRS, is often just the natural unreliability of FRS. I mean, it's tendency to journal wrap, or its tendency to not be able to keep up with changes, or its tendency to just sort of lose its mind and stop working sometimes, which is really all the reasoning behind the millions of bucks that got spent writing a replacement.
Right. And it's just that general frustration of, I make these changes in policy, when will they be rolled out? And I simply can't answer that question. Like, it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah. That's really kind of it. And we highly encourage, I almost never run into a customer who hasn't had at least one Syswell problem. They may have only ever had one.
Right.
But I mean, it was an incredibly painful experience. You know, your group policy doesn't necessarily stop working, but the ability to change it stops working. And if the last thing you did was bad, well, sometimes the worst case scenario is the group policy that's causing a huge problem is the one that's the only one that's working now. Because it also broke all the DCs and broke Syswall, so you can't fix it.
No,
easily. So that's the gnarly point.
Well, this reminds me of the old SMS trick, right? Where we push out a patch that would disable the pusher.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Boom. We're done. Now we gotta walk around to each machine.
Yeah, and that's not too bad when it's when it's say 10 or 20 or even 50 DCs. But I've had some cases where we were trying to repair Syswall. There's a fellow that sits next to me, Ken McMahon, who does a lot of DFSR and FRS work, and he has pretty much the legendary case. He had a Syswall repair case that took 3 months because the customer had servers scattered literally all over the world and sometimes couldn't really identify where they were physically or if they were on or,
oh my God,
you know, just all kinds of power issues and stuff. So having a bunch of DCs be offline was sort of expected in their environment.
Right.
A lot of emerging market stuff. And so, you know, areas that your computers are still kind of a new concept. So it was, he just trying to fix Syswall, and it took months and months and months to finally iron it all out.
And this is people actually physically going and finding these machines and tweaking them to get them back
sometimes
in.
Sometimes not finding.
Yeah. I've walked into a data center, not sure where my machines are.
Yeah.
And try to figure that out. And it's bizarre.
It's exciting stuff for everybody involved.
So let's talk a little bit about, why do we need a migration utility for this? This should be pretty straightforward in theory. What's the hard part of moving from FRS to DFSR?
If you have a small environment, if you have a couple of machines, maybe even just one or two replica sets, doing it by hand is pretty straightforward, pretty easy to do, as long as you've got a small setup. The problem with these FRS environments that have been around for a while is they tend to get kind of octopusy. So they get really big and out of control. And because if at this point, you know, FRS was replaced 5 years ago. So if you still are using FRS, it's probably because you didn't want to mess with it. But that also means you often don't really know what it's doing anymore. I mean, 5 years is a long time for an IT department to keep the staff around and tend to hop around jobs.
Well, you're hinting at this issue of people get afraid of their Active Directory infrastructure. It's working right now, and I don't want to touch it.
Yeah. That's probably the biggest fear is that, you know, if it's working, as far as I can tell, I can only make it worse.
Yeah.
So people don't touch it. So oftentimes, it's part of the times they're using this tool, it's simply just to inventory things. We did have, when Syswall support came around, you know, we have DFSR MIG, so that came with the OS, and it gave you that option. And we had a ton of people ask what were the options for custom. And at first, we just said, we'll figure it out. See you later. And then they kept coming. And so
No, I really need to know.
Right. So then I said, okay, I'll write a white paper on it. So I wrote this TechNet white paper on how to do it by hand. And they kept on coming after that. That didn't work either. So we finally sat down and said, look, we're not going to be able to get a product group to write a tool to do this. We talked about it for a long time and tried to kind of argue the customer's case, and we ultimately lost. It was going to cost too much money and too much time. So
for something that'll ultimately be retired.
Yeah, exactly. For a dead product, right? Yeah. So they're sort of like, to them, Windows 7 is a legacy product.
Yeah. You know? It's funny, isn't it?
They're always working on the thing that you're not seeing. That's what's new.
Well, and here we, and here I am out in the field with a ton of XP machines to this day. Like, I'm sorry. You guys are working on Windows 8, but let me tell you what we're doing out here.
Right, exactly. And I understand that completely. I worked on the 7 beta and the R2 beta. I'm on Win 8 now. It's, you know, my job now. And so it's hard for me sometimes even to step back and think, you know, once upon a time I had a legitimate job in the field where I didn't have everything at my disposal at all times, unlimited budget and, you know, the ability just to talk to the guy that wrote the component.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, that, you know, that all kind of kept falling over. And so Mike and I sat down and said, you know, how hard would this be? Came up with a, you know, I wrote up sort of a spec on how this would work. We kind of went back and forth, and then Mike did all the ugly parts and, went back and made some changes. But for the most part, the spec pretty closely matches what came out. It's not a real complicated app, so it wasn't like it, didn't have to change horses too much.
And I have your paper, which was from April. The tool's from, I think, May. So obviously this, you were focused on this early in 2000.
Yeah. Yeah. The paper I actually wrote the year before, and it took until then to get it published.
Oh, I see.
So yeah, I mean, it took, and I wrote it probably in a week and a half. And then around here, just the putting stuff up on TechNet is, you know, it's like putting something in Fort Knox and 19,000 people have to sign off on it. So even though it was written a million years ago, it took all the way until April to show up.
And I suspect the paper got a whole bunch longer from what.
Yeah,
you
yeah. Oh, out. Yeah. It started off nice and tight, and then it got tech-netted.
Right.
You know, we had all the personas, and assuming, I don't know what the rules are for style for TechNet, but it sort of seems like you have to assume that the first time the person touched a computer.
Well, and lots of warnings and all of that sort of stuff that if you're actually, you know, do this every day, yeah, don't worry, I'm backing up before I do anything you tell me.
Right.
Like these are common sense things, but I think, it, you know, when you go through the sort of formal process of making a paper, all of that has to be put in. But I'm looking at the core migration steps of FRS to DFSR, and it seems like some of these are just stuff you got to do, like your inventory and validating environmental health. Like there's no way around that. Those are steps you've got to do first.
Yes. Yeah, you absolutely need to. I mean, you need to make sure that you understand what you're working on. You need to understand what's out there. You need to make sure that you're not going to forget anything because, you know, it's really be unpleasant if you do forget something.
Yeah, you're going to, well, it's going to remind you of itself in a big hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that most users could not really care less about the DCs replicating or about really much of anything going on with the computers except for their email working and their documents are available.
Right.
And as soon as you start messing around with documents, you know, with FRS or DFSR, that's where you're going to get into a dangerous situation. So you want to make sure you take as much time as you can before you start to make sure that you're not about to take things that are working fine and make them totally
And break them. But I think this is also where you start finding orphan servers, stuff that hasn't synced in forever and servers you're not actually using anymore, especially in a virtualized environment. I find orphan AD servers floating around like nobody's news.
Yeah, it's really, really, really painful. We have a whole program you may have seen in the past called the AD Wrap program that our field engineering folks do for customers. If you get a Premier contract, they'll come on site and spend a week on site and run all these tools and help you sort of like verify that your environment's totally running perfectly and is optimized and is following best practices, all this stuff, and it locates any problems. And it's routine for it just to find tons of servers that are completely phantoms
that people don't know about and that often chunks of workstations are depending on, even though they shouldn't be. So I guess it's interesting how much, I mean, you know, it's such a trivial thing to say, hey, inventory what's using FRS and check your environment health.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But to me, feels like that's 80% of the battle. Like,
probably.
You get that under control, the rest of this is going to be easy.
It's the same thing for DFSR for SysVol migration. In fact, what I tend to write about there in both TechNet and in the AskDS blog is that if you spend most of your time making sure that FRS is working fine just before you do the migration will work perfectly.
Right.
And it almost always does. It's you started with junk and then you migrated junk and now you've got DFSR doing junk.
Right.
The real problem we run into. We almost never get, and we've only ever had a handful of cases where the migration itself didn't work. It was always just garbage in, garbage out problems.
Yeah. If you take the time to actually work on the analysis side of things and tighten stuff up.
Yeah.
Because the rest, after you're past that point, I mean, I'm referencing the paper here, but I imagine the tool does the same thing, is backup, remove, deploy.
Right.
Those are the manual steps, but I got to think the tool basically does those three steps.
Identically. Yeah. So all it does is it lists out, I mean, if you run the tool, it just lists everything out. That kind of gives you your inventory phase. And then it allows you to save everything off. That's the export phase. And then you delete everything. And then you import everything into DFSR and you're done. So the tool does all those things in the same order with the same basic steps. It's just doing it for you rather than making you have to go do it by hand.
Right. So, yeah. This doesn't sound that complicated. Now, am I forced to re-replicate under DFSR if I've got a distributed system here and the WAN links are going to take a while?
Well, the nice thing about this is, yes, technically, you are re-replicating.
Right.
You set up DFSR that first time. But since if you did your homework and everything was replicating fine already with FRS, and you did the steps and it just, you know, basically pulled out FRS and put DFSR in, all the files are preceded. They're already there perfectly.
Right.
If FRS thought they were identical, DFSR will also think that they're identical.
And won't actually move them. It'll just check CRCs and go, yeah, that's already there.
Precisely. It'll just take a bunch of SHA-1 hashes and pass them around between the servers. And if they all, you know, match, that's it. There's nothing further to do.
It just mysteriously happens. I'm just trying to get a feel for how down am I when I'm doing this? Is this a midnight thing?
Too badly. The tendency is for the end user, hopefully, if things are going correctly, is they tend to work on one server. So if I have, with their writing data, if they're reading data, who cares?
Right.
And they can go wherever they want. As long as they're reading data, the odds are that the data is pretty static, like Syswall, or, you know, some folder full of HR docs or something. It's not really ever changing. It doesn't really matter. And then the end user wouldn't, if you took replication out completely, the user probably wouldn't notice and probably wouldn't be affected because nothing's ever really getting replicated. It's where they write stuff. So if they're writing data all the time, the key that I focus on for the customer is make sure that you're not going to just any server all the time. Focus to the end user so that they tend to go to the same box.
Right.
They use DFS namespaces anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're pointing to only one server through a map drive. Either way is in good shape, because if it's only one server, that's it. We're already good to go. And they're updating their data. And if it doesn't replicate out for a while, well, it's probably not going to hurt too many people's feelings.
No, they can get their stuff.
Yeah. And if it's DFS, you can do things like target priority, or you can just, you know, have a specific target in one site that they're in. And if you're just generally trying to keep them focused on one box, that's the best practice anyway. Because that means that they're never going to have an inconsistent experience. Even when replication's working, it's not instantaneous.
Yes.
So you don't want an end user to be able to routinely run into stale documentation that they're working on. That wouldn't be pleasant.
Yeah, just because synchronization is a little bit behind.
Yeah.
It's really, the whole distributed system is about surviving failure, not so much about balancing load.
Correct.
So, while I'm just thinking, I'm still wondering if this is a middle of the night thing to do. Like, I'd rather do this when the fewest number of writes are going on.
Absolutely. I would say a weekend would be good, or maybe when most of the people are out. So, you know, around the holidays and stuff, not anywhere near, you know, important times, not near taxes or billing or sales or closing the books or anything like that.
Because it strikes me as one of those things where if it goes well, it's done in an hour.
If it goes properly and the way that it goes pretty much all the times I don't get to hear about, then nobody ever even noticed.
Yeah. Nobody knew it even happened.
Yeah. I only ever hear about the stuff where it didn't go properly in this job. Nobody calls to say hi.
No. Nobody still tells you, let me tell you how well that worked. And of course, the frustrating thing here is that, again, we're making fun of TechNet documents. Right up front, it says, hey, you should be doing this in your test environment.
Right.
Nobody has a test environment that's as messed up as reality.
Yeah, that's the thing. For me, when I write stuff or when I say, and I harp on test environments all the time, knowing full well that I'm not talking to anybody who's listening, is more for familiarization. For me, the important thing is getting a little muscle memory, because you don't want to be learning how to do something in production, it's a, you know, you don't want to make the mistake there that was just a bonehead user mistake.
Yeah, you sent the wrong command.
Yeah, you don't want that because it's not easy to recover, and that's a, you know, a resume generating event.
Yes, so. Yeah, that will be a bad moment for you. But on the other hand, boy, it would really suck to be walking out the door, leaving, you know, after they remove FRS step, but before the deploy DFSR step.
Yeah,
you know, like you've really crippled an organization at that point. Active Directory is busted. There's no file replication anywhere. Like, stuff is broken. That's not a good thing. Is there any impact? If I'm already using DFSR for my custom syncs everywhere, is there any extra issues around switching sysvol at the same time?
Oh, like, I mean, if you're still using FRS for sysvol, and if you were doing them all, like, all the operations at once?
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, sort of real-world scenario is I'm using DFSR in my organization for my custom synchronizations, and I, you know, I've now been confronted with the reality of, hey, I want to move to 2008 R2, which means sysvol's got to switch over. Is there any extra surprises here?
Not really. It's a different process. I mean, you're using a nice inbox tool now,
right?
DFSR MIG kind of is more sophisticated than this because they had the advantage of being able to make the DFSR service do extra work on their behalf,
right?
So FRS, like this tool right here, the custom migration tool, like you have to be able to contact servers. I mean, it doesn't understand replication really. It doesn't really understand any of that stuff. It just understands settings.
Right.
Whereas DFSR MIG understands the concepts of the DCs working kind of latently. It doesn't need to go to talk to every DC, and it's pretty sophisticated. And you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to migrate your sysvol. Even in R2, you could still use FRS if you want to. It's just a question of, you know, it's kind of a drag to use.
It's not that good a tool. DFSR is a better tool. Ultimately.
Well, yeah, I'll give you an example. If you are the type of person who wants AD replication to go as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. most customers are, they tend to turn on change notification, inter-site change notification, because they're saying, well, you know, this doesn't really use that much web, you know, WAN traffic. They're not making that many changes. But when I make a change, I want it to get out to all my DCs now, not 3 hours from now. Well, FRS won't abide by that.
Right.
He will just run as slow as he ever did.
It runs when it wants to run.
Yes. And whereas DFSR will abide by that, and it will also use inter-site change notification. So if you change your sysvol over, you can make your sysvol run as fast as your AD for the first time.
That, which is, again, that's a guy who wants pretty tight control over the way his infrastructure is running. He wants to know when his policies have been pushed.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a big reason. But I think there's also this implicit threat that, you know, this may be the last version of a server that supports FRS.
Yeah, and they were in there. And I say there's no developers for it. I'm not kidding around. I know more about FRS than anybody in the product group at this point.
Wow.
And I occasionally get asked by people in the product group how FRS works for some question that they're having, because there's nobody else to ask. The developers are gone.
Yeah, so there is a strong sense here that this is really going to be deprecated and you want to get away from FRS.
Yeah, it's the real deal.
Yeah, so I guess that's the other element. But it's an interesting point that FRS to DFSR, that tool, is about migrating custom replication. If you want to migrate sysvol, you use DFSR MIG.
Yes.
And MIG, is that part of the admin pack, or is it right in Windows?
It's right in Windows. It comes with 2008. As soon as you DC promo a box, DFSR MIG shows up.
Right.
Or as soon as you add the feature role goo stuff.
And so that's really the thing to ship your sysvol across. Any incentive to move sysvol before I move my custom sets?
Not really. It's entirely up to you. You can do it all on the same weekend. They don't affect each other.
Well, and I would argue sysvol sounds like it's a lot. Unless you're doing something wacky with sysvol, it's an easier migration than your custom sets.
Yeah, I mean, it really is canned. There's not, you know, you're not being given a whole lot of options. Like with this, you kind of have to follow some steps, and you have to do them in the correct order. With DFSR MIG, it won't really let you do anything wrong.
Right. Different tool.
Yeah.
And slightly different mindset on it as well. Still jumping back to the manual method here. So we've talked about the fundamentals of, you back up FRS, you drop FRS, you deploy DFSR. Final steps really getting into the replication health part of this. And I think DFSR has a much better ability to let you know how it's doing than FRS.
Yeah, you have a few different options with DFSR. FRS, you have almost effectively none.
Event log,
which will tell you, yes, there's a problem.
Yeah. and then it mysteriously went away. That's all I ever get from my event log. It's broken. I don't know why. Yeah, oh, it's working. I don't know why.
It's really, really so not awesome to work on.
So
DFSR, here's a bit of trivia. The fellow that worked on and helped design DFSR was a guy that used to work in support here in Charlotte. And he decided he wanted to go off to the product group. And he had known FRS very well, and he had been sitting there being kicked in the teeth by FRS for years. So he said, I'm going to go work on this thing that replaces FRS. So a lot of the lessons learned in this product came from support and from him saying, we really know what's not good about it. And one of the things that's not good about it was there's no way to really tell what it's doing or why it's not working. So that's why
we should build more products like this. This is the way we should be building products.
It would be great, wouldn't it? It would be great.
I've always been of a mind that you guys in Tier 3 and the Premier Field Support guys almost should have a requirement once a year you just work with the product teams because you've got so many war stories.
That has been changing. We have an internal program that we've been doing for the last year now where we fly developers out to our support sites and we make them sit there and
do the support.
Watch their products get support. We make them support products for a week. And it's usually pretty eye-opening.
I work on the other side of this equation. I often work with the product teams when we're making shows, and every so often I get an opportunity to get one of those developers to come and speak to an audience at a conference. And same thing, that guy gets mobbed by a group of people who are actually using their product and have some very strong opinions about how it works.
Yeah.
I think anytime we can get those guys out of Redmond and in front of real customers and real customer experiences, we're going to get better products.
Yeah, it makes sense, and it works pretty well when it does. I can't think of a whole lot of components and windows that have a health monitoring output. Like DFSR, you can just go into the snap bin and say, tell me about the health of this, and give me a report.
Yeah.
Most things aren't like that.
So we talk about the diagnostic reports?
Yeah, so that's the health diagnostic. You can just run it from the snap in or you can run it from the command line. Some customers I know just schedule a task to run it from the command line, say every night, at 2 a.m. and they just have it email it to them and they just take a quick look at it, see that things are looking okay when they come in the office. Other customers, they get System Center, they do the full MOXIE and System Center has management packs for DFSR.
Right.
For all versions and that'll go very, very deep and tell you what's going on, in real time. And the nice thing about all this stuff now, rather than the way we did with FRS, was FRS, you had the event logs, which were pretty limited. And then you had some kind of wacky out-of-band tools that were just sort of boshed up by people that didn't have any support. So you had ultrasound and you had sonar, and those things just kind of floating around.
Yeah.
And you sort of hope they work, and if they don't, it's just too bad.
Yeah, but that's just people who had the pain and tried to find a way to find out why they were hurting. I mean, I like System Center. It's a great product, but it's also a fairly significant commitment, not just financially, but learning to use it well.
Yeah.
But what I really appreciate is that the sort of core of that is built into DFSR anyway.
Yeah, we're getting a lot better about that now. Starting in R2, we started, doing the BPA process.
Right.
And some stuff in the box where the product group is pretty well on board with support and with the field now that it's not always going to work.
Yeah.
And whatever your thing is, I know when you were writing it that it sounded like it was going to be magical, but, stuff breaks and it's nice to know why.
Yeah.
And that mindset really has gotten a lot better even in the last couple of years.
And just instrument the fact that they're instrumenting their software better so that we have more detailed view of it. It failed and here's why.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's another thing you can see for DFSR is the debug logs.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other product we have that instruments so deeply out of the box. It's just, again, the person that was working on that component was just sick to death of having to figure out what the FRS was doing. And so he made sure the DFSR would tell him.
Well, and it's funny, I've spent enough time as a developer to know I write that stuff for myself when I'm building it. It's just that I take it out when I ship it. So right. It's kind of nice to ship it as a switch so that you can see deeply when it's out in the field as well, when it's doing something you didn't expect.
That's our hidden shame. most of our debug logs, you know, that's why there's most of our debug logs in Windows or in any product are, you know, they're indecipherable to most people. And yeah. Certainly, you know, if you're new to them, they just, you know, if you looked at a user ENV debug log, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's saying errors that don't exist and all this nonsense. You have to get used to it. It's just because it wasn't written for you. It was written for some tester, you know, 15
a guy who worked pretty deep in the plumbing who had a whole other set of intentions on how to use the tool.
It just so happens that you get to use it, you know, lucky you.
Yeah, well, and bits and pieces of it will be useful to you. It's just a shame that we take that away unnecessarily. Once in a while, that's going to save somebody some heartache.
Yeah.
Hey, Ned, it's really been fun to talk to you. It's half war story, half product discussion.
It's my pleasure.
And, I don't know there's much more to say here. Ultimately, this is where we're all going, and it doesn't look like there's going to be many more versions of the migration utility.
No, that's going to be it right there. I've only had to create the one version, and we have not found any bugs with it, which is a first in my career.
Wow. Who's better than you?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty much the simplest app ever written.
Right.
So it's not like it had a whole lot to break. So.
Yeah, there you go.
But, if anybody runs into issues with it and they send us through our bug tracker on that page, we'll be happy to take a look at them.
Right, because it's not part of the main support stack. You do have to go directly here, and I'll make sure there's a link on the site for it, and folks can communicate directly to you around that.
Yes.
So what are you going to do for a living when FRS is actually retired?
Oh, gosh. I've been thinking about moving to the Turkish mountains and drinking mint juleps. I have no idea.
No idea.
It'll never go away.
I mean, if
you think about it, just for R2, we're looking at, let's see, when did R2 come out?
2009?
Yeah. So 2019
would
be the earliest that we could see FRS go away. And if Win8 includes it, and, you know, the odds are fairly good that it would.
Yeah.
Then what, probably a few years from now, and then 10 years after that, I mean, I'll be retired, and FRS is going to outlast me.
Yeah, there you go. Ned, thanks so much for talking to us.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.